I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Unhealthy outlook. A church leader in Canada asks lawmakers to address the country's rapidly rising assisted suicide numbers. And baby steps. A major U.S. city holds its first March for Life.
Reaction is pouring in after the Department of Justice releases a nearly 900-page report saying the Biden administration targeted peaceful pro-lifers. The report says under President Biden, the DOJ weaponized the FACE Act and collaborated with pro-abortion groups to target pro-lifers. The report also says attorneys monitored the activities of pro-lifers for years before charging them with crimes. Now pro-lifers are responding. Jeremy Dice from First Liberty said in a statement, quote, unequally applying the law denied justice to our clients and undermined our republic. Worse, deploying the FACE Act as a means of political cover is an admission that the Biden administration could have done more to protect Americans nationwide. Instead, the Biden DOJ chose politics over justice. One pro-lifer whose wife was arrested during the Biden administration and then pardoned by President Trump says he welcomes the report.
It is somewhat amazing that we do have an administration willing to apologize on behalf of a U.S. government department, the so-called Department of Justice, for their inappropriate and in many ways malicious and vindictive actions toward Americans. It was all under the Democratic Biden administration.
Christopher Bell also voiced his concern about the current administration's refusal to reinstate restrictions on abortion pills like mifepristone.
However, even with this great apology and with the tremendous pardon by President Trump, who's done a great job in many ways, we still have the abortion pill running rampant. There is so much more to do. That pill can be pulled off and should be pulled off immediately.
This comes as an order of religious sisters files a lawsuit against a gender identity law in New York. For 125 years, the Dominican Sisters of Hawthorne have run a hospice for terminally ill cancer patients. Now, Empire State officials are warning the sisters about restricting rooms and bathrooms to biological sex. The state is also asking the sisters to use the preferred pronouns of patients who identify as transgender. Earlier this month, the sisters filed a lawsuit saying the state is violating their rights under the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. One of their defenders told EWTN News Nightly that the lawsuit could set a precedent for religious groups fighting gender ideology.
The court could say, well, only the plaintiffs, the people that are filing this suit, receive relief from this this law. But it could be just limited to the Dominican Sisters of Hawthorne. But if the state wins or loses, they might appeal. And if they appeal to a court of appeals, that would be the next level. And then after that is the Supreme Court. It could pan out that the New York law is struck down. But as far as, you know, Supreme Court, if it gets to that level, then it can set a precedent that's nationwide that most other federal courts would look to in their rulings to say, how should we rule on this? How should we apply this, our Constitution, to this type of law?
Dave Eubing also says the sisters were not looking for a lawsuit, and the state is threatening to close the hospice center. One member of the community told EWTN News, quote, I'm not really worried because I know the Lord is going to take care of us. Social media giant Meta recently banned one of its artificial intelligence chatbots from discussing abortions with minors. The parent company of Facebook and other social media platforms says its artificial intelligence is trained to engage in age-appropriate discussions with teens, adding Meta chatbots will not offer advice nor opinions. This comes as an opinion piece in USA Today blasted a pro-life initiative that seeks to give abortion-minded women options on keeping the baby. AI chatbot Olive is from Choose Life Marketing and is believed to be the only pro-life chatbot currently in use.
When it comes to building a culture of life, reaching the next generation is of paramount importance. This is especially true when it comes to women and girls in crisis pregnancies. One organization led by pro-lifer Nellie Roach is using AI to do just that.
We are committed as Choose Life to go toe-to-toe in terms of technology. If the secular world can use this technology, we can use it too, and we can use it for good.
Gen Z, the first generation to grow up in the digital era, is often called digital natives. And hot on their heels is Gen Alpha, or the iPad kids.
Human connection is incredibly important, but this generation, they are comfortable in talking to a chatbot in order to get a scheduled appointment.
They are also arguably the generations most impacted by abortion. Population Research Institute crunched the numbers, which showed that Gen Z lost more than 16 million of its members to abortion. Gen Alpha lost upwards of 12 million. That translates to each generation missing close to 20% of its members.
This is a generation of anxiety. And so they have grown up with their phone most of their lives. And so they are okay with technology, and it allows them to actually get speed to support without having to talk to a human being.
Gen Z and Gen Alpha, in turn, seem to be aborting at higher rates. Recent data in England and Wales showed that in 2022, nearly 48% of pregnancies among women under 25 ended in abortion.
Now, remember, the abortion pill is our competition, because you can get an abortion pill online. And so what we want to do is be able to sort of pause her and allow her to be able to get in contact with a pregnancy center. Oftentimes the crisis does not, you know, happen between 9 and 5. It typically is a place of just, just emotional drainage.
At their most vulnerable, women are turning online for answers. And most search results are AI-generated, and some encourage abortion. That's where Olive steps in. Olive is a pro-life AI chatbot that meets these women where they are and helps provide pro-life alternatives in their search.
When she taps on the chatbot, she taps on Olive. Olive responds to her in human-like, human-like language. This allows her to sort of schedule an appointment. Then she knows where she's landed so that she doesn't continue to search for an abortion pill. That the women who need help actually deserve, speed to support. This allows pregnancy centers to do is be able to spend more of their time focused on the ministering of her when she does come in. And it allows for the transactional part of that appointment to be done with AI.
In a digital-first world, the first voice a woman encounters in a moment of crisis can shape what comes next. For groups like Choose Life, that means not just participating in the digital space, but competing in it.
I don't want my movement, our movement, to be catching up. We want to be in the forefront. We want to develop tools that are already being used, but we're going to use it for good.
This comes as the faithful around the world are still processing the killing by euthanasia of a 25-year-old woman in Spain, despite objections from her family. The case raises many questions about the startling rise of euthanasia and assisted suicide. EWTN Vatican contributor Sophia Schubeck has more.
How can someone in that state of mind have had the choice and have had known what to do? That's what's so scandalous about all this.
All eyes were on the Sant Camil Hospital in Barcelona, Spain, when on March 26th, 25-year-old Noelia Castillo was hours from being killed by euthanasia, despite objections from her parents and Christian legal experts.
È evidente che lo Stato spagnolo non ha fatto abbastanza per aiutarla, perché in questi casi bisogna aiutare le persone a ritrovare il senso della loro vita. Non si può offrire la morte come soluzione alla sofferenza. Le persone vanno aiutate.
Noelia's troubled childhood consisted of living under state-run guardianship, suffering several sexual assaults, and a suicide attempt out of a fifth-floor window that left her wheelchair-bound and depressed.
So euthanasia was legalized in Europe in the early 2000s, and since then, thousands of people have been victims of euthanasia. Why was this case of Noelia Castillo such a shock to the internet when so many have gone before her?
Semplicemente il caso di Noelia ha colpito l'opinione pubblica e ha causato una reazione devastante, perché permettere l'eutanasia a una giovane donna ventenne che ha subito abusi sessuali, che ha in mano la disperazione e la sofferenza, invece di aiutarla gli hanno permesso di accedere all'eutanasia, nonostante il padre ha molto combattuto per cercare di evitarlo, poiché lei, essendo in depressione continua, non era veramente capace di intendere e volere.
And do you fear that her case could be a blueprint for future euthanasia laws in Europe?
Il problema è che ci sono già centinaia di casi di donne giovani che si sono suicidate perché erano in forte depressione. Professor Theo Boer dell'Università di Utrecht, grande sostenitore dell'eutanasia nel 2002, anche lui ha dichiarato: abbiamo sbagliato perché abbiamo aperto un piano inclinato che non si ferma più. Vediamo quello che succede in Belgio, in Olanda e in Canada. Hanno incominciato con malati terminali e adesso si uccidono disabili, depressi, si lasciano morire alcolisti, malati psichici. Poi dobbiamo renderci conto di una crudele realtà. Costa meno uccidere che curare.
I think that you always have to follow the money trail. It costs money. So it's really, I think in the end you can say it's a cop-out. It's really a way not to deal with social issues. And this is the real issue. The vast majority of people who want to die is because they have a relational issue, because, you know, nobody loves them, because they don't feel loved, because they're alone. And we have a society with a lot of loneliness today.
And Father, do you think that the Catholic Church is doing enough to combat euthanasia?
The popes, we've been speaking. We've been hearing the church speaking, the papal teaching. But in terms of what happens in practice, that's varied from parish to parish, from city to city, diocese to diocese. Pope Leo had actually developed a prayer for this recently. For these kinds of suicidal attempts. I think it's a beautiful prayer. Pope Francis would always talk about this, the elderly, the sick, the weak. And this is exactly what JP2 talks about. I'm going to quote his Evangelium Vitae. He calls euthanasia a false mercy and indeed a disturbing perversion of mercy, adding that true compassion leads to sharing another's pain. It does not kill the person who's suffering. We cannot bear. It's like we cannot bear their suffering, and so we get rid of them. Instead, here it's saying compassion, sharing their pain, learning to share their pain. That's true compassion.
Before wrapping up his nearly two-week trip to Africa, Pope Leo XIV issued strong words defending the elderly. The Holy Father made the remarks at a home for the aging in Angola. The Holy Father says caring for the weakest is a sign of the quality of life for any nation. Pope Leo XIV added that the elderly may be in need of care, but they also have wisdom.
E não nos esqueçamos. Os idosos não devem ser apenas assistidos.
Let us not forget. The elderly must not merely be cared for. First and foremost, they must be listened to, for they hold the wisdom of a people. And we must be grateful to them, for they faced great hardships for the good of the community.
Before leaving Angola, the Holy Father blessed 8 babies in less than 1 minute. Let's take a look. This comes after the Holy Father blessed another baby during his trip in Cameroon. A nun approached the Holy Father and asked him to bless the child in her arms. She told Pope Leo XIV, quote, "We love you. We pray for you." Coming up, quirky kids. A new book shares faith-filled strategies for neurodivergent children to flourish. Welcome back to EWTN's Pro-Life Weekly. I'm your host, Abigail Galvan. April is Neurodiversity Celebration Month, an initiative focused on recognizing the talents and strengths of those with autism, ADHD, dyslexia, and sensory issues. A new book examines faith-filled ways for neurodivergent families and children to thrive. Quirky Catholic Kids is written by Catholic mom and educator Ginny Coaches. We recently spoke with her about her book, which seeks to help parents find peace of heart and faith-filled tools to support unique children. Ginny Coaches, the author of Quirky Catholic Kids, joins us now. Ginny, what inspired you to write this book and why now?
I have three neurodivergent children. You know, my oldest is 19. And when I started the Quirky Catholic Kids ministry in 2017, I was feeling really kind of just alone and lonely. And then I realized that there were other women out there like me who are Catholic moms raising neurodivergent kids. And, you know, I've written several books for neurodivergent families. And then I realized, you know, I don't have a primer. I don't have a book that kind of like explains the nuts and bolts and helps parents really understand their children and what's going on. So when the opportunity arose with Sophia Institute Press, I was really honored and grateful to God for the opportunity to write the book. So
is there a piece of advice or something that you'd give to parents who have a neurodivergent child that you think would be good for them to know?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. But I mean, if I had to think of one thing, I would be to encourage them to remember that typical and holy are not the same thing, mm-hmm. that you don't have to fit into a standard box to be, you know, the person God designed you to be. And so there's no like, yeah, exactly. Just that typical does not mean holy, you know, that you can have challenges and struggles and still reach, sainthood, if that's where we're called.
So. I love that. Now, your book features words from scripture and intercessory prayers of the saints, yet the term neurodivergent originated in the 1990s. How did you find all of this Catholic content on what could be considered a relatively new topic?
I did a lot of research, you know, in the secular arena first, and then the Catholic part just came from my own life as a Catholic woman, as a Catholic mom, and then being able to connect the two, I think it's really important because everything that I do, you know, I can't separate my faith from my professional life. It's just not possible for me. So I think they dovetailed nicely together because the more research I did on neurodivergence, you know, the more my kids were diagnosed with different things, I began to see, you know, the wonder of God's touch in that. And so it was kind of natural for me to put the two together.
That's beautiful. Now, in your book, you also include an index of dozens of saints with neurodivergent traits. Can you tell us about some of your favorites?
Yeah, I think my top favorite is Zaylee Martin. She's just always been kind of my soul sister as far as, you know, raising both Leonie and Therese, both of whom exhibited traits of being neurodivergent, especially Leonie. When I first read about her, she was my daughter to a T, and my daughter is level one autistic, not impacting language or intelligence. So they were very similar in a lot of ways. And then St. Thorlach, who is kind of the unofficial patron saint of those with autism, St. Carlo Acutis definitely had the hyperfocus that is common with, you know, ADHD, the ability to go down a rabbit hole to, you know, its very far end. Yeah, so those are probably a few of my favorites right there.
Now, one part of your book focuses on developing social skills for neurodivergent children through games, role playing, and stories. Mm-hmm. Why was it important for you to include this?
I think that's one of the big areas where neurodivergent families tend to struggle a lot, because it can be hard to have a brain that is wired differently, a brain that takes in information from the world around you and processes it in a different way from your peers. So sometimes it's a matter of learning how to express your emotions. It's a matter of learning how to, you know, have a give and take in conversation. And other times it's just a matter of, you know, learning that other people are different too, and it's okay that we're all different. But I put that in there because I really think, you know, friendship is important. And I also think it's important for kids to have the tools they need to navigate a neurotypical world on their own terms.
Now, a question for you. How did having neurodivergent children expand your vision of motherhood?
Well, I think I started with this idea that it was going to look like a 1950s Holi card. And I've been saying that a lot, but I was expecting, you know, everything to be perfect. Yeah. And it wasn't like that at all. And so, you know, after a period of like denial and grief and just really struggling with, you know, the dichotomy I was seeing between how brilliant my children were and how much they struggled in other areas, you know, I was able to see that, you know, God doesn't necessarily give us what we think is going to be the perfect life or the perfect family. He gives us something much better, which is always, you know, what is going to refine us and make us holy and bring us to the people that we're supposed to become. So yeah, that would be my answer.
Amen. It's a beautiful answer. Now, if people would like more information on your book, where can they go?
You can find it on my website, Quirky Catholic Kids. You can find it on Sophia Institute Press's website. You can find it anywhere books are sold.
Great. And are there any last words you'd like to leave us with?
Just that I'm praying for every family out there who has a quirky Catholic kid.
Wonderful. Well, Jenny, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Hundreds of pro-lifers in Colorado braved cold temperatures and a mid-April snow shower for the state's annual March for Life. The day began with Mass, then continued with a concert and rally at the state capitol, followed by a march through downtown Denver. Archbishop James Golka of the Archdiocese of Denver says a march for life is more than a moment walking through the streets. It should be reflected in everything we do. Chelsea Menick, owner of Castle Rock Women's Health in Colorado, told the crowd that one of her clients was pressured by her boyfriend to take the abortion drug. Menick says the mom got in touch with her, started abortion pill reversal, and the baby is now showing signs of improvement.
That we're standing up for those that don't have a voice. We're standing up for those brave moms who want that second chance to continue their pregnancy and to save their baby. So that was kind of my hope and prayer for people at the rally, was that they would just be motivated to keep standing up and keep being that voice for those who don't have the voice.
Back in the mid-Atlantic, hundreds of pro-lifers gathered in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, late last week for the city's inaugural March for Life. The day included a rally and march around downtown Pittsburgh. Many participants held signs that said, "Love life, choose life," and "Pray to end abortion." Michael New, an assistant professor of practice at the Catholic University of America and a Steel City native, was also in attendance. He says Pittsburgh is an important city for the pro-life movement.
Unfortunately, the University of Pittsburgh does a lot of research on fetal organs. They get these, you know, fetal tissues from local Planned Parenthoods and other abortion facilities, and we need to put a stop to that. You know, I think that's, you know, clearly unethical, and you know, I think that they're starting to get some more attention from the pro-life movement. So the rally was right there, right in the shadow of the University of Pittsburgh campus. The pro-life group at Pitt was a co-sponsor. They were there in good numbers. Some important things are happening there as far as building a culture of life. So I'm glad we had a good presence there.
Pro-lifers also took to the streets for a rally in Poland. The country's president joined thousands of participants in the country's 20th March for Life late last week. One organizer told local media that this year's march is important because fundamental human rights are being questioned across Poland and Europe. This includes the right to life and the right to raise children according to one's beliefs. The country's president says the thousands of pro-lifers in attendance are proof that the family is important to the people of Poland. Finally, tonight, earlier this week, we celebrated the birthday of the late Mother Angelica, the foundress of EWTN. She was born Rita Rizzo on April 20, 1923, in Canton, Ohio. After a difficult and rough childhood, at the age of 21, she entered the Poor Clares of Perpetual Adoration in Cleveland and became Sister Angelica. She later fulfilled the dream of starting a monastery in the South, and in 1981, she launched the programming of the Eternal Word Television Network. Amid the televised masses and other programming, Mother Angelica often spoke of fighting for life and defending the unborn, words that remain as relevant today as they were in her lifetime.
We here want to build up women. That's what you're going to do, too. You didn't know that, did you?
I'll try.
Yeah. We want to build them up. We want to show beautiful women throughout the country. They're doing awesome things. And women with big families, don't fall over, who really work hard. And they shouldn't have to feel they've committed some crime by having a large family. Mm-hmm. We want to bring women out in all their beauty, the way God made them.
Mother Angelica also warned of anti-life laws that we see around the world.
Why are you talking so much about life? Because I want other people to live. That's why. It's a teaching of the Lord that God alone gives life and God alone takes life. And when we begin to manipulate, then we can be sure we endanger our soul and the soul of others. And nobody thinks of that, you know.
That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTNnews.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.